Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by Betterment. Let's talk about you and your money. You like to relax every now and then. Your money likes to work. And Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. While you're catching up on sleep, your money is up early, automatically reinvesting your dividends. Your money is a total workhorse, so you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab, and today we're talking about hidden truths.
Some of the truths that we gather, by the way, are hidden in letters sent to Dr. Oliver Sacks in New York City, and he occasionally lets us, in essence, read through his mail. He gets people sending him stories and problems all the time. And this thing you're about to hear, which is part of a live show we did called In the Dark, this one comes from Royce Hall in Los Angeles, is essentially mined from Oliver's mailbox. It's about, well, we'll just let you hear what it's about.
Hello, WNYC.
I want to introduce you to someone.
Hello, John.
Hello, this is John Hull.
Hi, John. This is Pat Walters. We have been emailing.
I had our producer, Pat Walters, get John Hull into a studio.
Oh, Pat. I, for some reason, imagined you as a woman called Patricia.
Yeah, this happens to Pat all the time, so many of his blind dates end just suddenly. Anyway, John Hull is a theology professor in England, and he is blind, but he hasn't always been blind.
No. I was born with a condition, an inherited condition, and I developed cataract when I was a boy of 13.
And then things got cloudy?
Exactly, a milky whiteness.
But it happened slowly. At first, his life really wasn't bad at all. He lived a pretty normal existence. He went to college, he got married, he had kids. But eventually, cataracts developed, and they got worse. It was gradual, but over the years, his world kept getting darker, and then darker, and darker. Until, when he was 35, his world went totally dark.
When I lost my sight, I suffered a lot from boredom. And I just didn't know what to think about. I mean, when you're sighted, you've always got something to think about. You know, the wet waves are rising and falling on the beach, the girls are walking past. There's always something. But when you're blind, what do you think about? What fills your mind? That was a problem for me at first.
But one night at a party with his wife, Marilyn, something happened that got him thinking.
I was at a party, and an old friend came up to me and said, John, there's something I think you should know. I said, what is it? He said, I think you should know that Marilyn is looking particularly beautiful tonight. Now, I felt, how dare this man put his eyes on my wife and have the cheek to come and tell me that he thinks she's beautiful. Huh? He went on to say, in a way, John, you're fortunate. To you, she will always be as beautiful as the day you married her. Now, I told Marilyn that story after the party was over. She said, some of my female friends are telling me the same thing. One of them said the other day, you know, Marilyn, in a way, you are fortunate. John will never see those little gray hairs, those little wrinkles. And then I thought, Robert, what is it like to be a beautiful woman and not to be able to display yourself to the man you love? Huh? No point in getting new clothes, no point in going to the hairdresser. Okay, there's perfume, but half the time the bastard doesn't notice. You see what I mean? Our worlds were becoming so profoundly different. I had to say to myself, and this is the crux of my experience, how am I to live with this woman? Am I to live in nostalgic memory every time I'm with her? I said, no, I will not live in nostalgia. I will live with this woman as a living sighted woman. I, as a living blind man, we will live together in the present moment. We will accept each other as we are, across the abyss which divides us.
And how exactly does he do that?
Well, he didn't want to picture his wife as she used to be, you know, 20 years ago. So he made a willful and conscious decision to stop picturing her altogether.
That was how I faced the future as a blind man.
He decided that he would live without pictures at all. So anytime a picture would pop into his head, he would consciously push it away, and this became his routine.
When I meet a new person, I don't any longer wonder what they look like. I don't know what my house looks like.
You don't picture corridors, rooms, windows.
No. It's funny how much the visual memories are attached to those words. Even as you say, corridor, I can see it going away in front of me with its perspectives disappearing.
Yes.
And yet, when I'm walking along a corridor, I don't have that picture.
Wow.
When I'm standing in front of a window, I don't have that picture.
When you are talking to your kids,
yeah,
do you see them or what's going on?
I don't see them. I hear them, I feel them, but I have no idea, frankly, what they look like. See, it's more profound than that, Robert. I have to try to remember what you mean by look like. I've not only lost the contents of that concept, I've lost the concept.
And he says he's lost it by choice.
Which is strange. So he says he chooses not to see his wife or his kids.
Yeah, because he says, you know, all you know, what I'm doing here is I'm just honoring the truth. And the truth is, I can't really know what my wife looks like. I could put my hand on her face and try to feel my way across, but any image that I conjure up wouldn't be real, really, wouldn't have all the details. In effect, it would be a lie. And when it comes to my wife, I can't bear the idea of a lie. So
I just can't imagine, though, not wanting to imagine your wife's face.
Well, other blind people obviously do this differently. And in fact, when John wrote a book about this stuff, he heard from a bunch of other blind people who said, you know, this makes very little sense. In fact, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So meet Zoltán Tóri.
Z-O-L-T-A-N is a Hungarian name, Zoltán Tóri, and I'm a clinical psychologist.
And like John, Zoltán was not born blind. He had an accident. He was working in a factory.
It was a battery factory.
And he was getting this huge drum of acid down from a shelf.
And it had a plug which was, the screw was worn away on that plug. And it, when I was undoing it, it just flew open. And the whole damned 44 gallons poured out into, more or less, into my face.
Oh, my heavens.
And the acid burned his face, and then it went to his throat. And it burned his vocal cords, and of course it went into his eyes.
Almost immediately the acid began to eat itself into the cornea.
Within minutes?
This ghastly charcoal gray fog was so thick that I really couldn't find my way anywhere.
Once Zoltán was out of the hospital and learning to live as a blind person, he says,
I was advised to concentrate on touch and on hearing and all the other senses and forget about sight. But this was not acceptable to me.
Because for Zoltán, images were essential. For one thing, his dad had been a filmmaker.
Head of motion picture studios.
And when Zoltán was a boy, his dad would give him movie scripts.
Movie scripts to read and to visualize and to memorize.
And to him, looking at scripts and imagining them in his head, that was his form of play. So when Zoltán lost his sight, he thought, well, I'm going to do now what I used to do then with the scripts. I may not be able to see the world anymore, but I can certainly imagine the world.
And I decided to repopulate the world with images and reconstruct reality for myself.
So, now when Zoltán walks into a room and he puts his hand on a couch or chairs or a table,
I see the furniture correctly in the manner in which You would see it from the corner of your eye.
He paints pictures of everything that he touches, everything that he hears, even smells in a room help him visualize the room.
The smell of the place would tell me about cleanliness or the use of the place. The echo would give me an estimation of windows and open spaces and alcoves. I really live with a kind of continuously produced film strip.
And Zoltan says, I am now so good at this kind of thing, so good at recreating the world in my Technicolor head, that he believes that what he sees up here is actually and literally and verifiably in the world. And he says he would risk his life, and does risk his life, daily on this proposition.
He would risk his life on it?
That's what he
says. What does that mean?
Well, he has a house. It's a multi-story house. And there's some tiles on the roof that periodically need replacing. And, you know, to him, it doesn't matter where he fixes it nighttime or daytime because he's blind. So he'll go up on the roof, and he has this idea that just by touch in the middle of the night and careful feeling and remembering, he can do what he has to do.
I thought, hell, why shouldn't I try to do this? First, I repair the guttering and then large sections of the roof.
But wait a second. You're blind, though, right? You're totally blind.
Totally.
So then...
Totally, totally.
Well, then what are you doing on a roof is my question.
Well, this is what my neighbors asked. They thought I was crazy, you know.
All right, so now here we have two very different ways of being blind. You have one guy who fills his mind with pictures, vivid, vivid, vivid pictures, and the other guy says, I won't do that. I think the only way to live in the world, honestly, is to choose... it's a kind of double blindness, really. Not only are you dark on the outside, you go dark on the inside as well. So we wondered, wouldn't it be like more than cool to get these two guys together to duke it out? Not to mention how politically incorrect that would be. So we decided to put them together by phone. So even though one of them works and lives in the United Kingdom and the other in Australia, we worked through the very radical time differences and we brought them together.
Can you hear me?
Oh,
yes, I can hear you.
We've done it. Hooray!
Yes,
wow. Okay.
Good, 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 good.
So... here's what I'd like to do. Zoltan, can you just describe, since you're sitting there with your wife, what you know about her face?
Well, this is not a problem at all. I've known her for, 40, 50 years now. And just through the touch, it is very, very easy to reconstruct her mouth and her turned-up nose and smile and her curly hair and ears. It's like a living image.
But tell me, when was the last time you actually saw her face with your eyes?
I never saw her face with my eyes.
Never?
Never, no. Never. I met her only about 5-6 years after I lost my sight.
I see.
But this doesn't matter, John. This doesn't matter at all. The reconstruction is so vivid for me. I actually see it.
Well, I'm just lost for words. Zoltan, tell me, are you totally blind?
Yes.
No light sensation?
None whatsoever.
Your wife's eyes, what color are they?
Brown.
Is that...
slightly flecked with little yellow spots in it. Hmm. And they are also large, expressive.
She tells you her eyes are expressive.
No, John, there's more to it than that. I have years and years and years worth of experience, and other people's responses get all factored into the construction of a complex image.
But you cannot actually literally see her. You can only imagine that you can see her. So why does it matter?
Because emotionally we do not react and cannot react properly to things that we cannot visualize. The whole human organism is constructed to react to pictures.
You know, I think he has a point when he says that.
What do you mean?
Well, because I can't, if I think about it, I can't actually imagine having a feeling without a picture first.
Well, I can help you out. I'm cold, I say. You don't have to see like icicles coming off my nose. You know that cold, you know what it means without, or this is a hard table. You don't need to see me hit it with a mallet.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about relationships. Like, don't you actually, in order to have a relationship with somebody, don't you have to first imagine them as a being in the world with a form that you can then attach your feelings to?
Well, only very vaguely. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there who listen to Radio Lab, if you do, and you know, heard it for a while, and you had a vague sense of who was talking and what they looked like, but it wasn't important.
Well, I think it was important. I mean, I don't think they had this image. I sort of hope they didn't, in a way. But you have to have some picture. I mean, why is it that quintessential experience when you listen to the radio and then suddenly you see the person on the radio and you're like, you know? Like, that's a classic experience. And I think it's because in that moment you realize you have been picturing somebody and you have to picture that person in order to relate to them.
You have to.
Yeah, you can't relate to a blank.
Well, John would say that you're being a little narrow-minded, and that is exactly what he said to Zoltan.
Zoltan, you are trying to impose a visual totalitarianism upon the human brain.
No, John, it isn't I. We are visual creatures.
Blind people are not visual creatures.
Oh, come on, John. You said that you lost the visual world. Actually, I think that you just let it go. No,
I didn't just let it go. I extinguished it for the sake of a greater reality.
What is the greater reality, though?
Truth. He's talking about the truth.
Oh, come on, though. That's like accountant's version of truth. That's not a real truth. Well, if a truth is blank, then why would it be a greater reality than the opposite? A fantasy or whatever, a lie perhaps, but at least it allows you to be in the world with other people.
Lie. So you find a lie as a useful standard for how...
No, I just mean you want to live in the world and you want to connect and be... Okay. Supposing he does it how he says he does.
Yeah.
Like, how do you even do that? How do you connect with something or someone that is absent, that is intentionally held as a blank? How do you do it?
Well, you know, that is actually a hard question. I couldn't quite figure it out for myself, so I asked him.
It's quite a difficult thing to describe. When a little boy, Joshua, when he was about a year, 12 months old, 15 months maybe, my wife and I were at home and we had a visitor. Marilyn said to me, that's my wife, she said to me, tell me, darling, what does Joshua look like? I had to say, darling, you know, he doesn't look like anything to me. She said, yes, yes. But what does Joshua mean to you? And I said, well, Joshua to me is that giggling, thrilling, jumping, kicking bundle of boyhood that I throw over my shoulder. Joshua's those little feet that kick me in the chest. He's that beautiful, warm face that I lay my hand on when he's asleep.
Well, it works for some people, and that is how John does it. That is John's way.
Seriously, every time I hear that story, all the memories of sitting on stage just come flooding back to me. Mm-hmm. It's so funny.
It was very, very fun to do. And
we're going to do it again.
Yes,
actually.
We are touring with a new show. It's called Apocalyptical, and it's about, well, I don't want to, it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be, the name kind of, I think, says something about what's going to happen on that stage.
And if you're in Ohio and you're living in Columbus or Cleveland, or you're in Toronto.
I've never been to Toronto, so that's going to be fun.
Ann Arbor or Detroit or Milwaukee or
Chicago.
Yeah, the Windy City.
My hometown of Nashville, Tennessee.
Atlanta, Georgia, New York, my hometown, or Boston or Hartford or Denver.
Or Dallas or Austin or Houston or Oakland or Austin. Cupertino.
We've been meaning to go to Austin, so yes. Even little Cupertino and big fat Los Angeles, Portland.
And Seattle. Seattle.
All those places. If you live near or around or are really passing through those towns in October and November of this year, you might want to come and visit us because that would be very lovely.
Yeah. So the place to go, if you're interested, is radiolab.org/live. All the dates are listed there with links to tickets. Radiolab.org/live. We'll be right back. In stereo.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.